two animal companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading some more information from Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deafblind Pink Puppy and His Family by Melissa Shapiro, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. And if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deafblind Pink Puppy and His Family by veterinarian Melissa Shapiro. Last time, Melissa told us of her experience picking up the tiny pink puppy at Petco. His screaming in fear was noticeable and challenged everyone's ears. Chapter 2, Born This Way. Human beings are a part of the animal kingdom, not apart from it. So says Mark Beckoff, biologist and ethologist, behavioral ecologist and author. Sitting in the middle of the kitchen floor as I watched the six canine members of the household sizing up this tiniest of puppies, I felt a wave of joy that brought with it a series of memories and realizations. One of the clearest images of the same immeasurable feeling of happiness came when I was about 6 years old, as my family welcomed home a mini schnauzer puppy whom we named Pretzel Bitsy. A couple of weeks earlier, we had paid a visit to a pet store in Queens, just outside of Manhattan, where I'd fallen in love with the dachshund puppy. Up until this time, my mother always had to be the bearer of the news. Melissa, we know how much you want a puppy, but we can't have one because of Daddy's allergies. My father's allergies were very severe, so that was pretty much the end of the conversation. But I wasn't a child used to giving up once I had my mind on something. I knew nothing about the treating of allergies or about the certain dogs and how they were thought to be less or more aggravating to allergies. What I did know was that my parents loved me and my two brothers and that they would figure out a way for us to have a dog under the right circumstances. My parents, Arlene and Harold Foodman, who both grew up in Brooklyn, New York, but who had made their way to Connecticut once they'd begun raising a family, were the absolute most supportive mom and dad that I could have ever wanted in my life. They were the original enablers. Whatever it was that looked to be of interest to the three of us, kids, all born within 4 years, starting with me, followed by brother Mark in the middle, and then Bruce the younger, my parents actively encouraged and enabled those interests and capacities. Before I was even 2 years old, as the story goes, I was drawn to animals of all kinds, right from the very start. One of my favorite old family pictures that crops up here and there shows me about 18 months pointing at a group of deer in the park. It didn't matter what type of animal it was. I wanted to stop to meet them. Because of this attraction, my parents decided we should visit every animal farm that they could find, every nearby petting zoo, and the Bronx Zoo on a regular basis. Now, the thought of how animals were really treated at many of these zoos made me cringe, although my happy early memories are full of images from the weekend trips to Tony's pet shop and frequent stops at the Nature Center in Westport, where there was an animal hall that I was never tired of visiting. The Nature Center offered an assortment of beautiful trails for hiking and other expeditions into the woods that fed my early love of being outdoors. There was a statue of a mama bear and her babies that we'd excitedly run toward upon our arrival and climb all over before our hike. After tackling the trails, we would head inside to visit the animal hall. There were injured hawks, owls, snakes, turtles, rabbits, and others who served as animal ambassadors for children to learn about wildlife and how we coexist. They were the first rescued animals that I had ever met. The program was innovative so long ago, when there was much less concern for the environment and wildlife protection. Almost a lifetime later, I still am amazed at and thankful for the length my dad would go to expose me to animals in various settings. In our neighborhood, I saw other homes where dogs were exalted as family members. Some neighbors even had two dogs, in addition to cats, fish, and birds. Even though my parents gently explained that my father's allergies made it impossible for us to bring a dog into our home, much less a cat, I refused to accept the impossibility. Somehow the words no and can't didn't register when it came to my quest to bring animals home. That was how, one day when I was 6 years old, I managed to convince my parents that getting a dog would be the solution to an urgent concern. My four-year-old brother Mark had become ill with a GI salmonella infection. The medicine must have tasted awful, because no matter what my parents did to cajole, persuade, tempt, or convince him to take it, Mark refused. Desperate, my family finally proposed, "Mark, if you take your medicine, we'll get you the present, something you really, really want." That got Mark's attention. He nodded his head slowly, agreeing to the deal, and took his medicine with a grimace. My parents praised him for the bravery. "Well?" my father asked. Mark hadn't thought this through. He hesitated, unsure. This was my shot. "A puppy," I volunteered. "Mark wants a puppy. He needs a puppy." No one questioned my authority as to what Mark wanted and needed in exchange for taking his medicine. My excitement must have been so contagious, though, because he immediately agreed, echoing, "A puppy? I want a puppy." My parents couldn't argue, so instead they started to do the research about the breeds of dogs that are hypoallergenic. There is no such thing as a purely hyperallergenic dog, but there are breeds that are much less allergy-provoking than others. Armed with that list of breeds, we went to the Queen's Puppy Store, owned by a friend of my aunt and uncle, which was where I fell madly in love with a little brown dachshund. As badly as I wanted the doxy, she wasn't on the list. But while I was preoccupied with her, my father spoke with the owner of the store about ordering a mini schnauzer. And that was, a few weeks later, my father brought home Pretzel Bitsy, who marked opening chapters in the book of dogs that were to change and shape my life. Pretzel slept in bed with me every night, and I walked her and doted on her. She ran around with us kids, rode in my go-kart with me, and was loved by the whole family. Mark got better and was happy for me to take care of the dog brought home to help him heal. My dad built a custom puppy pen a foot high made of sheetrock with newspapers on the floor and a bed in the corner. My mother kept her clipped and groomed, making sure my dad's allergies weren't aggravated. Pretzel was always sweet, playful, and friendly. She was a perfect first dog. Bringing home a new puppy meant that we needed to find a veterinarian. My mother chose the nearby Norwalk Veterinary Hospital, housed then in a small building set back from the main road. A newer, bigger, more visible hospital was built a few years later. Pretzel's first visit was with the younger associate, Dr. Donald Hattrick, who would come to epitomize the kind of caring veterinarian I wanted to be when I grew up. He was gentle and kind as he examined her and gave her puppy shots. He explained every aspect of the exam to me, and I ate up every word. He handled Pretzel with such care, it was obvious he loved what he did. Later, Dr. Hattrick would go on to become the owner of NVH and a lifelong connection for me. By the time I left for college, he had ministered to a series of dogs, birds, rodents, and other animals I convinced my parents to let me bring home. Despite his allergies, my father was happy with the menagerie that came in and out of our lives once Pretzel had shown him and my mother that we could be a home with pets. Initially, my dad said no to the eighth-grade science project mouse I wanted to keep, but relented once he saw how much I loved her. My mother was always supportive, even if she was the one who had to help with some of the caretaking. My brothers both loved Pretzel and all the dogs that followed. As adults, they both have families that include dogs. Pretzel was my first dog, and she was also disabled. She had slowly progressive cataracts that led to complete blindness by the time she was 6 years old. Pretzel adjusted and adapted so well that most people who visited had no idea she was blind. Of course, we were aware of her need to be kept safe inside and when she went out to play. Back in the day, dogs were often let out of homes to roam on their own. No matter how many times I begged my family members not to let Pretzel go walking unattended, she'd slip through a door and take herself out for walks. Thanks to her highly developed sense of smell and her ability to map the neighborhood, she usually made it back safely. Those times when she didn't return from home from one of her jaunts, like the time when I was about 12 and got home from school to find her missing. I'd run at the top speed looking for her, covering quite a distance, calling her name at the top of my lungs. Pretzel! 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 One day, tears streamed down my face as I recalled images of dogs who had been hit on the street. The thought of seeing her sprayed on a pavement fueled my desperation. Suddenly, after having scoured the far reaches of the neighborhood, I spotted interesting movements underneath a neighbor's porch, only three houses down. It appeared to be a big black garbage bag that was moving on its own. Obviously, there was something or someone inside it, and that someone was Pretzel, happily feasting on the neighbor's leftovers from the night before. As I grabbed her, my relief as having found her was overwhelming. Pretzel shook her filthy, garbage-soiled gray and white beard and gave me the equivalent of a dog smirk, as if to say, "You interrupted my dinner." I just hugged her tighter. Pretzel Bitsy changed our world, proving to my father that he wasn't as allergic to all dogs as he had once believed, so much so that I convinced him that we needed to get a second dog. We brought home a standard schnauzer named Tyke, who turned out to be a fierce, biting dog. She went back to the breeder in exchange for another standard schnauzer, a puppy named Siegfried, who was one of the worst dogs I've known. Over his 15 years, the 55-pound Zig took bites out of many of our friends. Why my parents kept him all those years was a mystery to me for a long time. He was a very good watchdog, which seemed to give my parents some comfort when my father was away on business trips, and I'm not sure that the trade-off was a wise one. I think my mother and father embraced their own love for animals that was there all along. They kept trying to say no. However, my parents were both so allergic to cats that there was no discussion about bringing any felines into the house. We did at different times have gerbils, guinea pigs, a rabbit, parakeets, turtles, a mouse, snails, and more. The line was drawn when it came to a snake. That may have been the only time my mother said no to me. After all, I was planning to be a veterinarian, and that was essentially a family effort. My parents did everything possible to encourage me and support my animal experiences. They never questioned my determination. Even back at age 6, when you made up your mind about something, my dad always said, there was no ifs, ands, or buts. As a parent myself, I know this kind of approach was not necessarily how every parent might have reacted to a strong-willed child. But my father would literally do anything for me and my brothers. Anything. My mother would as well, though she did not do it in the style of my father. Dad, an electrical engineer with multiple degrees in subjects that included math and history, was hands-on with everything. He planned and then took part in every outing or project that he believed would appeal to our sense of fun and curiosity. My mom was in on the plans as well, drawing from her path as an educator, a career that would span 50-plus years of teaching pre-K elementary school and religious school, and later working as a supervisor of student teachers. My mother practically invented the basics of enrichment without using that term. We had lessons for everything. For me, there were piano and violin lessons. For Mark, there was cello. And for Bruce, there were drum lessons. We attended cultural events, took swimming, skating, and skiing lessons, and were enriched by whatever else our mom deemed worthwhile. My mother went all out, passing on to me the lasting belief that if you're going to do something, why not strive to do it exceedingly well? She schlepped me to ice skating lessons and practiced lessons and sessions all over the country as if I were going to become an Olympic skater. Gliding over the ice with ease appealed to me, but I never thought my destiny was to become the next Dorothy Hamill, who, coincidentally, trained at the same rink as I. It was clear to me from watching her who was going to be the professional skater and who was going to be the veterinarian. In high school, I decided that it was necessary to give up skating so I could finally focus instead of running track and cross country. My mom was willing to go along with my decisions, but first asked me, "Are you really sure you are ready to give up skating?" "Yes," I answered, fully committed, explaining, "It's expensive and time-consuming, and it's time to stop. I love running." She heard me and agreed that it was time to trade in the ice skates for track shoes. My parents were my top fans and led my small cheering squad whenever they could attend. They genuinely enjoyed helping and being part of our learning experiences. Mom spent so many years creating posters, bulletin board displays, and other art projects for her students that she couldn't raise helping me with mine. Much to the later amusement of my three kids, she passed that habit down to me. Whenever my three were assigned poster projects in school, all the way through high school, I'd happily set aside time to add borders to the posters after they'd gone to sleep. With all my colored markers, I'd outline the poster boards in various matching colors. The process was relaxing and fun. The kids were delighted. It got to the point that they would confirm with me that I was going to do it when they went off to sleep. After a while, I'd actually feel guilty if I didn't spruce up their posters in various late hours of the night. More than anything, my parents taught and enabled us by example, the offspring of immigrants that embraced the ideals of the American dream, emphasizing the importance of hard work, education, and family and community. They chose to live in a newer part of Norwalk that was diverse and inclusive. Our neighborhood was packed with kids our age. We walked to school together and played outside together. We were very lucky to grow up with each other in such a tight-knit group of friends. It was like going to camp every day, and it was like that even as we went to school. We went to local public schools where we had friends who came from cultures and backgrounds that were vastly different from our own. Later, when I met Warren, I decided to describe to him those fun summer nights of kickball, jump rope, tag, and just running around. As I was telling him about some of my friends whom I still keep in touch with, I mentioned a kid we knew as little Morris Vaughn. Morris' mom was a teacher who knew my mother from Norwalk school systems. Little Morris visited our neighbors often and joined our full neighborhood games. When it was time for him to go home, his mother would call him, "Maurice, Maurice." I added, I think he became a pro athlete. I think he ended up playing baseball, I think. Warren burst it out laughing and said, "You know Mo Vaughn?" He then informed me that Mo Vaughn had been a three-time All-Star with a reputation as a fierce competitor and a powerful home run hitter as the first baseman for the Boston Red Sox. As a professional athlete, he was known for many things, but none of them was for being little. I had no idea. During the summer months of the neighborhood games, we would continue in after dark. Once the schoolyard started, though, my brothers and I were always the ones being called home first. We had a ridiculous bedtime of 7:30 every night, except once a week when Lassie came on. I lived for that show. Otherwise, aside from getting enough sleep, there were very few rules in our household. The toughest requirement enforced by my mother came from her belief that we should never miss school unless we were sick. Her own work ethic was such that she almost never missed a day of work unless she was sick, and that was rare. A huge priority for my parents was putting each of us through college and grad school, making sure we graduated with no debt. This was a tall order to provide for three kids and advanced degrees paid for in full. It was a great gift to be able to get through schooling and begin my career without being saddled with loans for the rest of my life. With my own kids, this became a top priority for me as well. My father adhered tightly to a fairness doctrine. Both he and my mother wanted us to know that we were each loved and supported equally, not only when we were young, but later, when the time came to start our careers and family lives. But their examples, they definitely helped to enable an eventual success. My father's professional journey began as a design engineer that led to tenures with RCA and CBS Labs and work in the space program as well. From there, he went on to become vice president of a manufacturing company before starting his own firm, which pioneered computer technology. His business, Data Service Company, developed and sold turnstile ticket and cash register systems that were used in major entertainment attractions in the United States and around the world. Arlene and Harold Foodman were never the do-as-I-say kind of parents who asked their children to grow up to fulfill their dreams and expectations. They truly parented by example, demonstrating their values by their deeds, but were constantly volunteering in different capacities. My mother was the president of the PTA, a major commitment, and she held other offices when she stepped down from the presidency. She and my father were active in philanthropy and civic organizations and volunteered for good causes through our local temple. My father volunteered for an organization that served disadvantaged youth, and he even agreed to become a Boy Scout leader, even though my brothers weren't in the age group that needed a scoutmaster. When I asked him what prompted his gesture, his answer was predictable. They couldn't find anyone else to do it. My parents enjoyed helping others, not because they wanted to be heroes or call attention to themselves, but because they genuinely liked being kind and making a difference in someone else's life. Another time, my mother finally put her foot down with my dad, spending so much time helping neighbors out whenever they had electrical problems or their cars broke down, and he would head on over, basically on call, fixing whatever it was for free. My mother asked him, "You do know that we have some things here that need to be fixed." My father got to work on our house. Harold Foodman, first and foremost, was and still is a devoted family man. Although there were times my dad traveled extensively for work, leaving my mom to manage the household, her own workload as a teacher and her continuing education in night classes and caring for those kids of us, he more than made up for it when he wasn't traveling. He helped with the homework in all of our subject matters, sometimes developing innovative techniques for mastering classes and challenges, like an instance in fourth grade when I impatiently attempted to speed up the time required to conquer my multiplication tables. "Hey, Melissa," he announced one evening after dinner, presenting me with a stack of homemade flashcards that he had designed and written out with prompts for multiplying all the numbers up to the 12. That's another thing about Dad. In addition to his day job as an electrical engineer, he's a natural teacher on top of being a professional level craftsman and contractor who can do electrical work, plumbing, roofs, tiling, carpentry, and minor construction, along with being a highly skilled mechanic. Later on, whenever Warren and I had something in need of fixing at our house or with one of our cars, we'd call my father. My brothers did the same. Becoming totally hooked on running and working out, I also wanted to run cross country, starting in 11th grade. But because the high school didn't have a girls' country team, I had to join the teams for the boys. This gave me yet another goal. After my first year running with the boys' cross country team, I was able to convince the school to start a girls' cross country team. My parents applauded the extra effort that I'd put in at home, running sprints around the 1/3 mile loop that circled our neighborhood over and over and over. The fact is that I wasn't a world-class athlete, but I knew how to grind, and that led me to doing very well at the race. Yet that's who my parents had enabled me to be. Perhaps that's why I knew at age 6 that I had to become an animal doctor. Not everyone's path in life is set so young. But mine was. There are many wonderful vets who have the right skill sets and affiliation and affinity for animals that eventually lead them to the chosen profession. We are just born that way, with an ingrained sense of responsibility that tells us we are here to understand, protect, and care for animals. Whether we are hardwired with compassion or it develops over time, I think it varies. I do know that there are many of us who are just drawn to animals, especially the ones who are disabled, hurt, or traumatized. We can't bear to even learn about a dog that is hungry, injured, or in pain without feeling a strong urge to help in whatever way we can. Those are the uplifting and lifelong feelings that drew me to care for the animals, to become active in animal welfare, and to tend to the needs of my own pets, and to absolutely without fail become a veterinarian. The phenomenon that explains what draws some of us to the path that we follow is not something I've studied closely. All I know is that I've been this way from as far back as I can remember. That's the chapter on Born This Way in Piglet, the unexpected story of a deaf-blind puppy and his family, written by Melissa Shapiro. Our next reading comes from Best Friends, the March-April 2025 edition of the magazine. And this is called Random Acts of Kindness. Instant Connection. It's not uncommon for people to find best friends and soulmates on social media. That's exactly what happened for Ash, a cat at an animal shelter in Texas. Ash has feline leukemia virus, known as FELV, a contagious virus that weakens cats' immune system and has no cure. It can be difficult to find homes for cats with FELV because they must be the only cat in the home or live with other cats who already have the virus. To help spread the word about Ash, a shelter employee created a post about the striking charcoal-striped kitty on Reddit, where he gained thousands of fans, including Joshua. He was looking to adopt a cat and felt a special connection with Ash. So it was no brainer for Josh to make the 21-hour round trip from Illinois to bring the lucky feline home. So now Ash is happily living with Josh. No kidding around. In Oahu, Hawaii, a white baby goat recently became a local celebrity, but for the wrong reason. Residents spotted Bella stuck on a cliffside, alone and unable to find her way back to her mom. They grew concerned as the days passed and Bella still hadn't moved from the perch. Local agencies weren't able to help, so residents took matters into their own hands. Through social media, a scrappy band of strangers organized into a rescue team, complete with climbing gear and expertise. They slowly approached the goat, and one of the rescuers picked him up and held him snugly for the hike back down. They brought Bella to the Aloha Animal Sanctuary, where it was determined he was in good shape, just a little hungry. Soon, Bella was off to home of his own, where he has plenty of space to play, and there are no scary cliff sites in sight. And those are random acts of kindness found in the magazine Best Friends, March-April 2025 edition. The slogan, "Together we can save them all." Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I hope you enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.